Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. It is the week in sports cars with Graham Goodwin. How are you this fine day in the UK, Mr. Goodwin?
Fabulous. Just coming out the other side of a heat wave and just starting to think about packing the bags again. Red Bull Ring coming up. I'm sure a little bit more about that later for the European Le Mans Series. But it's been a lovely summer so far this side of the Atlantic.
Beautiful. Well, I'm actually headed down to WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca in about 2 hours to cover the anticipated announcement of IndyCar's return to Monterey. So that should be fun. You know, Graham, I did something a little silly last week with the most recent Week in Sports Cars episode. So production-wise, I have a template, because the only two shows that I do for our podcast that have a standing audio bed, a standing music intro and outro, it's our Week in Sports Cars. It's our Week in IndyCars. Somehow, I managed to get them mixed up. So for those eagle-eared listeners, you might have noticed that last week's episode had a completely different musical intro, and same goes for IndyCar. And then I realized, well, rather than redo the whole thing, we're roughly at the halfway mark of the year, a little bit halfway past, so we'll just switch it up going forward. So hope you like the more rocky intro here, and if not, you know, let us know. You know, everyone who listens, you guys are great at giving us feedback. We can switch back if desired. Speaking of feedback, Graham, we certainly got some for our Q&A this week, and some of it solicited, some definitely not, but regardless, that'll be fun when we get into it. Another little programming note here. Graham and I are going to try something new starting this week, and I'm also going to do it with the Week in IndyCar podcast, where we're going to split the conversation and analysis and the Q&A into two separate things. We did ask for your feedback last week on what do you like, longer podcasts, shorter podcasts, and I didn't do an exact tally, Graham, but I'd say it was pretty much right down the middle.
So I think so, yeah.
It'll be an experiment. The traffic will tell us whether it's worthy or not to continue after, you know, a couple weeks. So we're going to try this out, and then as you will see, hopefully they're posted one right after the other. So there's nothing stopping you from listening to this and then going straight into Q&A. It's just a separate file to click play on. So, Graham, we are very fortunate during this month of July to have our friends at the Justice Brothers stepping in, wanting to support what we do. Definitely a brand, as I mentioned last week, that I have a long relationship with, and very thankful that they wanted to not only ask us to spread the news that their automotive additives, lubricants, and cleaners are America's brand for quality, but also to remind folks that they have been heavily invested in motor racing for decades upon decades, even sponsoring a certain car that I assistant team managed and assistant engineered at the 1998 Indy 500. The other key thing that they're looking to do, Graham, here in the States, is to try and grow their sales and distribution base. That would be from an independent standpoint. So if you are at all curious or interested in becoming part of the Justice Brothers team, looking to sell their automotive, semi-truck, agricultural, and industrial products, you can learn lots more about that and see if a future in being part of their team is something that would work for you at justicebrothers.com. So off we go. All right. Well, last weekend, my friend, we had the Pirelli World Challenge Series making its return to Portland. It also served as the major return for, quote, professional sports car racing at Portland during the much-loved Rose Cup Festival, which has been going on there forever, SCCA club event. I've been to that many times in my younger days as a race car mechanic. I'm not sure where we should go first, because the racing itself, I wasn't able to watch all of it because it was the usual 47 classes and 239 races that went on, but the quality of racing looked fantastic. I was disappointed, as I would have to imagine the series and the track came away with, the amount of fans who were not sitting in the grandstands. little proviso to add to that, Graham. It is a Pirelli World Challenge event held within this long-standing SCCA regional national type event, an amateur, you know, the big local amateur motor race. So I don't know how much it might have stood out as a big event to go see, but the lack of fans there, I would say, definitely it was sad to see, at least from my end.
It's never good, is it? When you know, I think everybody's been looking forward to getting back to Portland. It's been an event that an awful lot of fans have certainly voiced opinion online to say, isn't this great? Isn't this great? There is a reality here, though, mate. Use it or lose it. If it's going to go there and you've got a chance of getting there, then you've got to go and support those events, guys. If not, then it does raise the kind of questions you're effectively voicing right now, MP, which is, you know, I guess the question is this a sustainable thing going forward? I suspect, though, that's going to be one of the smaller questions on the agenda for a Pirelli World Challenge after weekend. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's quite correct that the fan base should be offering an opinion as to which place they would like to see back on a calendar. If there is any reason to believe, though, that the turnout of those events doesn't become financially sustainable, who's to blame?
Yeah, I mean, we have the question of trying to rebuild a fan base in Portland. And so I would say that that challenge supersedes anything a somewhat smallish series would or should be able to overcome on their own. I would not look to the Pirelli World Challenge series through its available marketing dollars to, you know, bring back 20,000 people on its first go-round coming back to Portland. I also cannot say, because I just genuinely don't know, how much marketing material, how many TV ads, how much you name it, was present for the event from the track side. And, you know, there's kind of this long-running joke between our friend Sean Heckman and a few others that, you know, the only thing holding IndyCar back is marketing. It needs more marketing. If you put more dollars into marketing, all problems would be solved. And we know that's not the case.
No.
It's not just simply a advertise and people will turn out. If that was the case, folks would buy every single product that they saw advertised on television.
The reality is it's a very crowded marketplace now. There are a million one reasons why people wouldn't even wish to leave home now that weren't, frankly, even invented 10 or 20 years ago. You know, if there's any kind of issue in terms of their ability to get there reliably, the cost of attending, whether it's to do with the weather, whether or not absolutely it's to do with the quality of the show they may see, the reality is there's a lot of very persuasive elements that mean that they or elements of or their entire family wouldn't wish to move their sorry butts from the couch.
Well, I would say there's that. But then there's also the question of, and this is just looking at some other domestic situations, we have a question mark that, as I mentioned, I'm heading down to Laguna here shortly for the IndyCar announcement. We have the hope and expectation that when IndyCar turns up in 2019, that there will be a huge fan base that has missed it all along for the past 11, 12 years and will come rushing back to see it. Actually, no, it's been even longer than that. It'll be 16 years, 15 or 16
Good
years.
Great.
But there's a hope that, boy, folks are going to come flooding in. But we don't know that. And the concern is, well, when a series like World Challenge or IndyCar or you name it, that once had a strong presence somewhere, goes away for a long time, if it's 1, 2, 3 years, okay. If folks that went at 18 are now married and have 2 kids and a mortgage and you name it, a lot of time has passed. Interests have probably shifted. Are those folks going to come flooding back? And again, if we just strictly look at what happened at Portland, With World Challenge, we had a fairly strong indicator that there was not a big audience waiting to come back to see professional grade sports car. We saw at the Phoenix IndyCar event, which hadn't been there, IndyCar had not been there, I think, for 11 years, Graham, went back in 2016, and it was a ghost town. And in it was a three-year deal. 2017, even worse. By 2018, I would have doubled the crowd size had I gone and just sat out in the grandstands during the race. I mean, it was appalling. So again, you roll the dice hoping that an old favorite track has something to offer. Sometimes you find out that maybe it doesn't. Who knows? Maybe, but also maybe on this first year back, maybe they'll find that there's more interest in year two, provided there is a year two. Well, let's jump on to the thing that I believe is going to take the majority of our brain power here, my friend, and that is Pirelli World Challenge distributing its 2019 plans. And because it actually says 2019 season plans in the release that went out. I'll give you a super quick background. I have had a long relationship with the series. I don't necessarily mean the folks in charge, but working in the series, running cars, building cars, consulting, engineering, managing, blah, 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 have had a love for World Challenge for quite some time, even back to its earliest days. Sprint racing, Graham, is what it had evolved into. Its formative stages was more or less street stock style competition with endurance mindset. That evolved into a true sprint race package that has been the big differentiator here in North America. And what I have parsed and read and tried to figure out on my own and looking at how the SprintX experiment, which cropped up a couple years ago, hey, we're going to do these short 60-minute long, quote, endurance races, driver change, etc. We have a series now that is effectively completely overgrown by this concept. And with the SRO taking a controlling interest, I look at where they are headed with its marquee GT class for GT3 cars, now from 10 events down to 7 starting next year, all 90-minute, quote, multiple, you know, two-driver endurance races. We have the GTS class, which they, you know, use the verbiage retaining the heritage of the PWC series. That will hold on to a 50-minute format, Graham, single driver. So that will hold the, that's the one standout for the sprint race format. And from there, we have TCR, we have GT4, which is now being split into East and West Coast series. I look at this among the top, at least the top class, and it strikes me as we have gone, we have essentially applied a Blancpain type filter to what World Challenge is. I'm concerned about where this is headed.
I looked at it and it was, there was so much detail, it was confusing at the first read. You had to read it twice, even three times, to be sure that actually what you got was the right. I mean, there is this thing. There is that, certainly you're quite right. There's an element of America Blancpainism to it. But the whole picture to me seems a bit confused. Was that sweeping change that came before the start of this season, just before the start of this season, to effectively wipe out any prospect of factory teams / drivers dominating proceedings. That certainly led to an impact on numbers. The odd thing here, and to be blunt as well, SprintX never bit for me at all. It just struck me as being too close to the original format of racing to warrant the change that they were actually making. It never really got purchased for me. It does strike me here that it's a slightly confused change. Let's talk for the moment, MP, just about the GT3 impact here. You're absolutely right. The principal thing is a reduction from 10 to 7 events, if you look at the GT plus SprintX calendar, and also a wholesale format change. Two drivers, not one, 90 minutes, not the shorter Sprint and SprintX formats, but not quite applying the Blancpain template to this. It's somewhere between Blancpain Sprint and Blancpain Endurance. Also, it doesn't say, although I think we can probably guess, that we're looking really here at a kind of pro-am format. So on that front, it's actually moved away from the decision that was actually made at the beginning of this year, and rather more towards bringing some of that pro talent back in. I could be cruel and say it looks to me as if part of that experiment hasn't worked. And I don't want to do that. I think they're perfectly entitled to take a look at changes they've made and say, actually, you know what, we do need to make a tweak. For a well-established series, this is a big number of changes. And we've not even yet got on to the other classes that are affected here. But for the GT class, you would like to think that the combination of Greg Gill and his US-based team and the SRO, now owners, majority owners of the series, have done plenty of stakeholder work to ascertain that this should have at least a firm basis. I wouldn't say success yet, but firm basis to build upon, to make changes that are this profound. It won't be, for the moment, a massive change in terms of the track time, although there is the as yet unanswered question as to what the season finale is going to be. Will that be the 8-hour race at Laguna Seca? It would seem that we're being directed towards considering whether or not that might be the case, at least MP. But for me, the key to it in terms of budget is going to be what is yet to come rather than what has so far been revealed. And we won't hear that for another couple of weeks. And rather oddly for the Pirelli World Challenge, that announcement will not be made in the US. It'll be made at the Spa 24 Hours.
Yeah. So let's keep digging into this a little bit further, Graham, because I think there's not only with the other classes, but also the overall mindset that we are seeing demonstrated here. This isn't an accusation. It's just more of a recognition of past applications. I don't think Stefan Rattel, founder, owner of the SRO, now control, basically the person pulling the strings at World Challenge, Stefan's never been one to tout or heavily push the public side of his modern products. It's not, he does not go into things thinking fan first.
Nope,
how
absolutely
can we
not.
Please,
correct.
Where, how can we generate big ticket sales, lots of folks on the ground? It is truly a paddock first mindset. What can we do here that is going to stoke the business interests of our teams? What is going to get more manufacturers involved? It is genuinely, I don't want to, it is kind of putting on blinders and treating the series that he is in charge of as entities in and of itself, self-sustaining. Oh, some fans showed up. Well, good for them. But we're not essentially here for you. That, I would say, is the biggest overall takeaway I have with everything that I've read about Pirelli World Challenge's plans, Graham, for 2019. We're going to make this change for us. We're going to make that change for us. It is strictly about responding to, according to some of the quotes that I've read, my racer colleague Richard S. James did a great interview with Greg Gill over the weekend that was very revealing, adding some definite multiple layers to what's intended here. And the responding to the requests and wishes of the paddock approach seems to be driving everything here. And while I can't say that is a bad thing, because it's their product, Graham, if they want to do that, they certainly have the ability to do that. But it strikes me as a vast departure from just a few years ago. Excuse me. From just a few years ago, when it seemed like its top GT class was a, you know, very strong success and strong rival to IMSA, and the rest of its classes were really being served up and presented like, wow, this is a great alternative to IMSA. Folks should really consider this. It's a lot of fun. Fans as well. Boy, this is great. Great cars, great drivers, etc. Here we are going into 2019, my friend, and it seems like for those who have treated World Challenge like you would an IMSA, an ELMS, FIAWEC, great everything, and boy, they really are thinking about us. I read this 2019 stuff as, nah, we're just going to look after ourselves in the paddock. Maybe that's the stepping off point for some folks who aren't exactly sure if the series is going to be something they would enjoy.
Well, let's respond to a couple of those points. Don't profoundly disagree with you on any of them. However, the success of SRO financially, commercially, and how they've grown their product is by building and maintaining strong numbers on their core grids. That's why the Blancpain Endurance Series, Blancpain Asia, for instance, are, you know, basically trying to stimulate and then retain very large grids, because that brings with it the entry fees, etc. In addition to which, the fees that they'll be getting from their key suppliers, which again are sanctioned under each series, so Pirelli in this case for the tyres, for instance. And then from there on in, the marketing spend that is exercised by both those entities, the teams and their sponsors. But it's going to be about building a core group that they believe that they can maintain and grow. Now, that for me is where there is the fundamental shift that is coming here over the next year and probably two. And the reason I say that is because there is a divide now coming between Pro-Am in the main GT class, where we know there have been concerns right around the world about the sustainability in the coming years of the budgets for GT3, and what they're doing with GTS, based principally around, of course, GT4 machinery, where they're retaining single driver, owner driver usually, GT4 sprint racing over 50 minutes, the traditional Pirelli World Challenge. And it strikes me that there's a message here that is saying, actually, the plan that we tried to roll out in GT this year, that hasn't really panned out. There's not really a lot of scope for that to kind of carry forward and grow. So what we're going to try to do is to divert our core base gentleman driver marketplace into GTS, and we're going to try and grow the GT3 product through Pro-Am Racing moving forward. That's where I think the message is. And they've given themselves as well, of course, a little further down the feeding chain, the opportunity to grow the entry level into GTS with this new GT4 East and West championships they're looking to be launching as well. So I think they're looking to build. I think they're looking to create some kind of ladder. As I say, only they know the content of the conversations they've had with current, past, and potentially future entrants as to whether or not their numbers stack up.
Let's cover a few more things, Graham, on the GT, GTS area before looking at TCR here. So if we look at where GT is going, this 90-minute, two-driver, seven-round thing, you would say, okay, well, we've had the Sprint X, quote, thing. Could this 90-minute format, the addition of 30 minutes to these rounds, could this be a true money-generating mechanism? You just mentioned about trying to funnel the gentleman Pro-Am drivers more towards GTS. I assume that there would be a similar mindset here by making the Premier GT class, Forged GT3 Machinery, a dual driver program. We will have to see exactly what they decide to spell out for driver ratings, and if they will enforce some form of Pro-Am Blanc Pan type model. If so, would that be the kind of thing where there are enough gentlemen drivers, wealthy drivers, funded folks who would want to pay to be in a GT3 Pirelli World Challenge based contest for, if we're talking true split, 42-ish minutes, 43-ish minutes, factoring in a pit stop here. It's still... It's close to the equivalent of doing a former, or what will be the former Pirelli World Challenge GT sprint format, you know, where you kind of sort of get to do almost a full standalone race, but obviously now with a teammate and in a tandem program. Would this be something that would attract enough folks to want to buy in to support that financially? Is this something where they believe in their paddock? They already have enough people to do that? I mean, that's going to be the first stress test, Graham. Who will opt in to pay for that to help make this a not just a reality, but a successful reality for them? And this is all done against the backdrop of IMSA. And it's WeatherTech Sports Car Championship GT Daytona class, where with a standard 2 hour and 40 minute event with GT3 machinery and a definite Pro-Am model in place there, part of me wonders if this is just IMSA GTD light. All right, it's not 2 hours and 40 minutes, it's 90 minutes, and we assume the costs will be a bit lower, but is this different enough to attract folks to pay money to do this who thought IMSA GTD is either too expensive or I'd be in the car too much? I don't know. I might have more questions than answers on this topic.
I'll give you the counterpoint. The counterpoint comes from conversations with a couple of three people at Watkins Glen fairly recently, which is that the one area where you are getting repeated concerns expressed within the GTD class is that the Pro-Am aspect of that is getting very blurred indeed, and that the true Am side in GTD is frankly a rarity. That may be the market they're looking to mop up. Certainly with seven events, that starts to become, doesn't it, you know, IMSA Lite in that instance may not be the worst thing. Actually getting people into that kind of level of competition, potentially coming from GTS, potentially growing their program from GT, particularly if they can find some commercial sponsorship to come with it alongside what they've been doing in GT or GTA. They tend to have done their homework, do SRO before putting money where mouth is. They don't tend, there's one thing they don't tend to do. After a number of occasions where they have thrown the dice and got a little bit burned, they don't tend to risk their own money, is the honest answer. And I would guess at this stage that there is a strong element of them being confident that what their current stakeholders, and as I say, those other two groups, people who've race before and have gone away, or people who potentially could be attracted, that there's a strong element here that they've got some reason for confidence that this can be a success moving forward.
So of the other items, Graham, before we move on to TCR and then move on to other topics altogether, my colleague Richard James also wrote about the fact that with this 90-minute GT format, the ability for PWC to come out and play on the streets of St. Petersburg with IndyCar and at Long Beach with IndyCar would certainly look like it is no longer an option. So would that mean PWC tries to arrange something with the other classes, with some of its sprint-minded content that, again, honestly, the racing's great. That's not the question. But is it the kind of thing that would truly get folks excited? Looking at little Audi and VW and Hyundai and whatever TCR cars, is that something folks would either get up early to watch or stay late after all the open wheel festivities are done? Or would that be something where folks go, this isn't kind of the cool Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Bentleys and McLarens that I'm used to. I don't know if this really stands out as a product I want to watch. So this is something that we have seen World Challenge has done more and more of, like at COTA, like at Portland and some other venues where they've broken from working alongside bigger series on bigger events and gone out and done standalone. So we'll be curious to see that of the seven rounds, if they are planning to try and send the GT product somewhere else altogether, or if indeed we will have World Challenge with at least its most recognizable product, Graham, essentially completely divorced from being on the card with other major events. So that too, just part of a interesting is a word that kind of encompasses many things. Just interesting again of where they appear to be taking themselves in a way that, at least from my perspective, really is more about what they want and what they need than trying to build a larger base of fans who are going to come out and support everything they do with feet on the ground.
Well, it does beg the question, which would be the favored product if they couldn't? I think it's a very good call that the two Banner Street Race efforts would be at risk here. Doesn't count out GTS, and yep, it doesn't count out TCR. And both of those have some level of potential appeal in terms of their current, you know, size and indeed potential growth. So my guess would be, bearing in mind you've got, what is it? I seem to remember it's 8 GTS rounds, isn't it? Not yep, as opposed to the 7 GT yep rounds. But I think it is 7 TCR rounds, or am I wrong?
I believe I'm trying to look through all
it's the seven.
So there's
it's
a lot
seven
of information here. Yes. Well, let's dive into the other key thing that stood out here beyond the splitting of a new GT4 America class with East and West Coast. That's what Greg Gill had trailed about, trying to limit travel and crisscrossing the country. There's one phrase in this TCR release, which, if we consider what has happened in GT, with Cadillac Racing being stripped out, real-time racing being stripped out, the true factory-backed efforts being stripped. There's a sentence here about TCR. Expansion to 7 race weekends. While the customer sport nature of the 3 TC classes, TCR, TC, and TCA, will be enforced. And if we consider that real-time racing, factory Honda / Acura effort for the past million years, they're the ones running the Honda TCR's effort, the one that Ryan Eversley is doing incredibly well in. If we look at Brian Herta Autosport, they are linked directly with Hyundai. And so this again makes me wonder, are we going to come back in 2019 minus real-time racing and minus Brian Herta Autosport in TCR as direct factory representatives?
Well, let's hope not, actually, because I just don't think the product's mature enough yet for it, is the honest answer. I think, you know, you've got to let these things run. It's not clear, by the way, from the formats that we've been given the information in as to how the GT4 East and West will fit in with GTS, etc., will fit in on the same race weekends, how this whole thing is going to fit together. But it does look as if we're going to get a calendar with a bit of a mishmash of classes. There will be some churn, if you like, between what classes are on what card at what race meeting. Inevitably, that will happen, the case, because the classes they've announced so far simply don't match up entirely. So for me, a little early to start to play that card in terms of TCR. Again, MP, unless they have been told, we would have been there if it wasn't for that darn Ryan Eversley. You know, and I sort of don't believe that that's the case yet. I sort of don't believe that. You know, if there is some huge potential class-defining body of people just waiting to roll out a new TCR car, I'm not seeing it yet. I'm sure that it's got some sustainable growth in it, that class. I'm a firm fan of it, but I don't believe that that is quite as defining a part of that class as potentially that it might have been in GT3. And in GT3, I'm real sorry, but that call did not pay off in terms of the kind of numbers returning to Pirelli World Challenge that I suspect that the championship would have wanted to happen.
And are we going to see hashtag fake time racing show up next year as the evil shadow organization? That isn't quote factory, but yeah.
What they with their driver Evan Riersley?
Yes, that boy, I tell you, that guy's a hack. What else? I mean, we've got in GTS with the shift there. 50-minute format will be retained with drivers up to gold classification eligible to compete. And here's the part that I think some others picked out as well. Next to the overall podium, which if we parse their words, I think they assume it's going to be three gold-rated drivers. Next to the overall podium, silver and bronze drivers will be awarded with separate podiums. So in theory, GTS at each round is going to have three separate podiums.
Exactly to your point that you were making, is the decision has been made that has been defined by actually what the paddock, looking internally, has asked for. You know, we've seen this in other areas of the sports in recent years. We've seen it at LMP1 non-hybrid in recent years in the FIA World Endurance Championship. Teams complaining, we're not getting enough value from our expense here. We need the separate podium. We need our guys to be in a press conference. And it happened. I suspect that this is being driven by not non-professional drivers unhappy with getting their asses handed to them week in, week out, and want some kind of recognition for, if you like, the peer group competition that happens beyond the overall win. So I think you're absolutely spot on that actually this has been grown from within a body of opinion from within that paddock.
Yeah, and I was about to apologize for struggling here, but then I realized it'd be silly for me to apologize. I'm just reacting to this in as natural a way as possible. I hope, obviously, that everything works out, that everything is awesome, that all the things that PWC aspires towards comes true. They have big grids. They have all kinds of things. Those are the things I genuinely hope we happen to see next year. I just also suffer from the problem of being able to read and having a bit of historical context and seeing lots of things that conflict with one another in getting to those stated goals. So many, many fingers crossed, Graham, that where Pirelli World Challenge is headed, at least for them, is something that makes sense and that they are happy with where they go. If that is something that also has a fan base attached to it, and folks turning up to watch those races and or rooting for it heavily in person, online, you name it, then I would say that's an added benefit, but that might be the greatest question mark of all, at least as I see it. Let's jump into something else that it saddens, I think, just about everybody, and that is Tequila Patron announcing its motorsports sponsorships. Not exclusive to sports car racing, but by and large, that is the number one place folks have seen Tequila Patron, that they will be ending all of their involvements at the end of the season. That means the team that is named Tequila Patron ESM, Extreme Speed Motorsports, is planning to revert to ESM at the end of the year. Interesting in its composition, Graham, that former Tequila Patron CEO Ed Brown, co-owner, co-founder of that team. You know, you can read lots of things on the internet about Ed's wealth and how much he has amassed. I don't know if Ed's personal finances would be something that we would look at and say, ah, the team will be fine. They don't need Patron. You know, Ed's a smart guy. I would not just default to the, oh, well, one of the co-owners is ridiculously wealthy. they won't have to sweat finding a sponsor. I think they will have to find a sponsor, Graham. And if there's some sort of bridge support from Ed, maybe. But as for long-term sustenance from his bank accounts, I think that would be a grand mistake to believe that will be their new working base once the green and black livery comes off the car.
Well, certainly that's what Scott Sharp has more or less directly said. There are no inactive search responses. They intend to be back for 2019. It would appear that they intend to be back with the current package, the Ligier-Nissan. To remind listeners, not a factory Nissan effort, never has been. It's been a customer engine deal masterminded by Scott Sharp and Ed Brown to put the GT3 Nissan Turbo V6 in the back of the Ligier. They've had real success with that car, though latterly it's struggled. It may be that it's just not suited the balance performance that's been allocated to it. But all of a sudden, that challenge for Scott Sharp and his team becomes very real indeed, because there's not a lot of time to get this done. It would also appear to be the case that Scott has had the heads up that this was going to be coming along, so may well have actually started that process all along. But all of a sudden, for the first time since that team really came to the fore, MP, they're going to have to be adding in an external marketing arm. In other words, they're going to have to sell themselves rather than sell the message of the product they carry on the side of the cars.
And with the somewhat recent sale of Patrone, this was not wholly unexpected.
No.
But what will be interesting to follow here, my friend, is this is the first time in IMSA's top class, and I guess I'm speaking from IMSA relaunched in 2014, this will be the first time, at least that I can recall, where a top prototype team, which is where the biggest budgets are commanded, is going to search for a sizable budget to continue in a stable manner. As I mentioned, if they needed to come out of pocket to get through the first couple of rounds next year, if a major sponsor does not emerge, I would say that is a fallback plan. But just in terms of, this isn't a single car program, two car program affiliated with manufacturer, there's money to be spent there, etc. This is going to be an interesting stress test. Mm-hmm. I really do see this as a little bit of State of the Union on IMSA and how far it has come and whether the distance it has traveled is enough for a Scott Sharp and Ed Brown to be able to go out and sell, as you mentioned, sell their program on the merits of not only the competitiveness, but primarily its marketing reach and value. And this is something that, if we just do a very quick look at the rest of the prototype class, there are select teams that have to meet that criteria. What ESM will do, if they are indeed hopeful of gaining a sponsor, Graham, is prove that, yes, what we can sell you is going to put eyeballs on your product. It is going to be a favorable thing. And this is the part that I think might be a challenge as well. We can give you a meaningful TV rating. With the switch from Fox to NBC Sports next year, and this is where the challenge is, they don't have a number. Now, they can go off of what they have had and what they currently are producing on Fox, which, as we've discussed before, it's not a number you can put in front of sponsors and expect them to come out of pocket. We expect NBCSN and NBC to be a positive lift in that area, but you still don't have that number. So I would say this is a concern that they're having to go out and try and acquire new sponsors without the ability to say, and this is at least a trend of TV ratings over the past number of years on this specific channel that we can suggest you would receive for buying in. You then look at the Action Express team, right? Just looking at their rivals and what they have to do. They do have sponsors, right? Action Express, Mustang Sampling, that's fantastic. On the sister car, Whelen Engineering. Well, we also know that that team is owned, started, and funded to some degree, I can't say exactly how much, by IMSA founder Jim France. So, home team, those cars throughout the years, sometimes they've had sponsorship, sometimes they haven't. Hasn't been a big deal. Sonny Whelen spending money for the second car there. Other than appeasing Mustang Sampling, Graham, not a lot of work there that has to be done to justify. If you look at the Acura Team Penske entries, that is an Acura-funded effort, period, end of statement. If you look at the Mazda Team Yost effort, that's Mazda, completely, with a couple of associates. The only pro-factory DPI that does have outside sponsors would be the Wayne Taylor Racing entry with Konica Minolta and some of its other associates there. And I know for a fact that they do have, you know, heavy demands placed on them, whether it's B2B stuff, corporate hospitality. They are pressed heavily to show value and have to meet that on an annual basis. So that might be the only one that stands out to me, really, Graham, in terms of true corporate-style sponsorship that is working at a level that ESM would need to hit with whomever they are pitching. After that, it's a lot of Pro-Am P2 models, either subsidized by team owners or drivers, funded drivers, etc. And yeah, so that's the one thing that'll be interesting. See if and what ESM can bring back four sponsors in a class where really, I think only the 10 Wayne Taylor Cadillac entry is the one having to do that right now.
Well, it is one of those real-time moments, isn't it, with apologies to real-time racing, no pun in any way intended. But it is one of those real-time moments where all of a sudden the question can be actively asked. This is a defining moment. This is the point where it has to be said, much vaunted IMSA model at the moment is put to the test. Does this wash it out there? Does it cut it out there in what is a ruthlessly commercial environment at a time when, let's face it, the economic picture is somewhat uncertain? It's going to be a very interesting few weeks and months for ESM and beyond that for IMSA. And I'm sure that the good folks at IMSA will be assisting Scott Sharp et al. As much as they possibly can, because that is a team of high quality that they will want to keep.
Let's look at a few more quick items here, my friend, and then move into Q&A. We have IMSA, Graham, heading to Lime Rock this weekend, kicking off the first of two GT-only events this season. The Continental Tire Series will be there as well.
Oh, sorry about that. Very large helicopter flying overhead.
I was going to say, either that or you have a train running through the living room. That is fantastic.
Oh, no.
Okay. I guess we spent a decent amount of time talking about World Challenge and its GT assets. Look at what IMSA has with its GT-only events at Lime Rock and VIR. And, yeah, I can tell you one thing for sure. I have no confusion as to what IMSA is offering with its GT Le Mans and GTD classes there. And I also have no confusion as to how incredibly great these events happen to be. It is, I would say, the closest thing we have in America to a Blancpain type thing, where we have just great GT cars, no prototypes in the mix, and really, really solid hardcore racing at a couple of beloved tracks. You've had the chance, Graham, to come over for Daytona and Sebring and Watkins Glen. There's a part of me that wishes the dailysportscar.com helicopter, which might have been what we heard, that might have been Stephen Kilby heading out on a date to go see his girlfriend.
It's just cruising elsewhere, just waiting for me to finish the interview. That's right.
See, it makes me wish that you had had enough fuel to bring that sucker over to see these events and cover the GT-only content that IMSA has to offer, because it is just truly stupendous in an American style, my man.
Well, I mean, regular readers of DSC would have seen exactly what Laurens Vanter thinks of the American racing experience. Spoke to Laurens at some little length at Watkins Glen about the options he's got available to him in his career with the Porsche factory team, and made it very clear indeed that he's thoroughly enjoying the American racing experience, and explained exactly why, and that generally came down to more pure racing, less restricting rules and regulations, etc. The kind of things that you would exactly expect a man of his calibre to actually utter. And yeah, I know for a long time there was that that background fan base pressure, as well as a factory and team base pressure for a standalone GT race. And it, generally speaking, hasn't disappointed, has it, MP?
Not at all. Not at all. Why don't we park here for a minute and talk about young Monsieur Van Tower, I think it was, we saw on the Goodwood broadcast, Laurens Van Tower, or I forget the exact spelling of it. But
Van Thor, I think it was.
Yes.
One word became two and they missed out on O.
The Belgian Hammer, yes, exactly.
Literally marvelous, yes.
Share with us, young Belgian Hammer's thoughts on the differences in American racing, European racing, and not so much saying good things about one and bad about the other. It was more a case of feeling encumbered, bound, and just overly regulated that seemed to kind of hit his little festivity button.
Well, before we get into that, there was an interesting exchange, and verbatim the exchange went, without talking bad about anybody else, I was asked whether I would want to do WEC. There were rumours I wouldn't work with Jimmy Bruni, and I decided I'd prefer to stay in the USA. I wasn't sure in the beginning, but eventually I decided, and I'm happy to be back. So he and Jimmy don't get on, so let's put that one back in there. What he said was, racing in the States is just a lot more pure. It's not just the WEC. Blancpain as well. So many rules and restrictions, stint limits in Blancpain. He pointed particularly to the point we've raised before, which is this at Spa, this 5-minute technical stops have changed the brakes, drive-through penalties for spinning the wheels, even a little bit. From a driving point of view, if you dive, put your nose in, you're not scared you get a penalty if there's contact. If you're push somebody off, you have contact while overtaking, you have to get positions back. The quote, I think, that sums up Laurens, anybody that's spoken to Laurens at any length would recognise this as being very Laurens Vanter. Here, it's just racing. You leave the pits with a pile of smoke, you crank the full engine open, you get applause. He's a pure racer, and you know what? You got to love him for that. Yeah, we could sit here and debate safety, and we could debate, where teams and drivers take liberties if the rule book is a bit less restrictive, but you got to love the old-fashioned racer that is Laurens Vanter.
Absolutely. ELMS this weekend, my friend. We have a resumption, finally, of prototypes, GT cars, some of those that competed at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in June. Always feels like it's both not enough time to recover after Le Mans, and then it also feels like it's been a long time. Tell me about thoughts on what's coming at Red Bull Ring in Austria, and what you think we might have play out in terms of who would be in front of the old motor racing event by the time we get to the end of it.
It's going to be fun. It's one of my favorite places to go racing. Fabulous surroundings for the Red Bull Ring. 42 cars once again on the entry. No signs that that entry is going to be any less secure than we thought at the start of the year. Probably the most telling thing before we get into the race is it will be our first opportunity to properly catch up with a number of people involved in one or two of the comings and goings at the Le Mans 24 Hours, and in particular, of course, TDS Racing and the G-Drive efforts that they put forward. That car, by the way, not coming to Silverstone, the 26 car, despite the fact that the initial prognosis from Roman Rusinov before Le Mans was that it would. But the TDS Racing outfit, Roman Rusinov and his cohorts, will be at the Red Bull Ring. I think they'll be expecting some questions. I can tell you from this journalist's point of view, they'll be getting some. Before that, though, there will be another of my post Watkins Glen chats, this time with Nico Lapierre, on the subject of that very issue.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, MP, he does not pull any punches with that, making it very clear that he feels that the team has been sailing pretty close to wind on the regulatory fronts, and certainly has no sympathy whatsoever with the disqualification that came their way for the adjustment they made, or the part they inserted into the fuel rig. They believed and have appealed on the basis they believe that their actions were within the regulations. The regulators say very different. And I think it's fair to say that in no small part, Nico, opinion fueled by the fact that he had two young co-drivers with him, Pierre Thirier, André Negrau, that have won that race at Le Mans and did not get their opportunity to stand on the top step of the podium, as any Le Mans winner has a God-given right to do, because of course the win was taken away from the 26 car the following day. So a pretty fired up Nico Lapierre. That might show itself on track. He's going to be there with the Dragon Speed team, but we're going to see, I think, a resumption beyond that of the more friendly level of hostilities. A goodly 50%, I would suggest, of the LMP2 teams, and there's knocking on for 20 of them, capable of the overall win, or at the very least a podium. The LMP3 teams, more and more experience comes their way. It becomes hotter and hotter at the sharp end of the competition there. And, you know, as we saw at the very opening race in the GT class at Paul Ricard, absolutely no shortage of barely concealed aggression in trying to push forward to grab the honours there too. It is, as I've said on this podcast and elsewhere, one of my absolute favourite current championships. It is available online, free to view, and I urge anybody that's not been introduced to it, particularly those of you stateside that enjoy your IMSA racing, it tends to be that we put IMSA head-to-head with the WEC in terms of who's got the best championship. Come and take a look at this. I think you'll be impressed. LMP3, LMP2, GTE. And boy, oh boy, do we have some fun with the racing here. I think it's going to be a corker. Definitely too close to call with this. We've had teams, whether or not it be United Autosports with their Ligiers, or indeed Panis Bartes coming forward with Will Stevens, the slightly less pacey at the moment Dallara's, but two or three teams there that I think could go extremely well, the SMP Racing guys amongst them. And then you get the hordes of Orica teams, and we've already seen wins from those cars, of course, this year. The Racing Engineering crew coming in with their win at the start of the year. Graf Racing have blown hot and cold throughout the year. Yes, G-Drive as well. And Duquesne Engineering, they look to be sniffing around the potential for a win. Dragon Speed 2. Honestly, there's teams into double figures that you could honestly say have got a realistic chance of coming away with the win. And that's just for the overall.
Wow. We also have a new hashtag from Grim Goodwin. Hashtag friendly hostilities. Definitely. that might be my favorite phrase of the day. All right, my friend. Well, we are at the end of our little chatty news and analysis, which means we're going to do something new here and bid farewell. But we're coming right back with the next podcast that we hope you click on here, which will be this week's Q&A. Thanks again to our friends at Justice Brothers for supporting the Weekend Sports Cars of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. So, here for the July 17 portion, we're going to say farewell, but also we're going to say hello because we're coming right back.